This is the Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Right here on Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show, we're taking a stand. We're not just talking statistics. We're sharing stories, real heartfelt stories from people all around the globe who have been touched by a brain tumor. It's time to raise our voices and spread the word. By listening in, you're joining a movement to make a difference. I had the pleasure of speaking to Charlotte and her mother, Alison, as part of Brain Tumor Awareness Month. Sadly, Alison's husband, Charlotte's dad, passed away from a brain tumor. His name was John, and they have a charity that is called John's Crew. They're going to now tell you about their experience and why Brain Tumor Awareness Month is so important to them.
Dad was always, would say, very active, wasn't he? Yes. You could always count on one hand the amount of sick days he probably had in his lifetime, really. He never got sick, did he?
No.
He enjoyed going to work. 2019, July 3rd.
He just collapsed in the bathroom, didn't he? And he was getting ready for work. And then he was banging on the floor and the dog heard him, Daisy. She heard him. And of course, Charlotte rushed to see. And he'd collapsed and we thought he was having a stroke at first. Which I think is what happens to a lot of people. And of course, he was rushed to hospital. They were very quick. They did a scan. And we were thinking, he's had a stroke. He's obviously not as well, healthy as we thought he was, making all these plans to get him healthy. And then the doctor just came and said, he's got a brain tumour. And you can't imagine how that is. You know yourself. It's just the most unbelievable thing to be told, isn't it?
Yeah, it was,
remember,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was quite a shock to all of us. And even in that moment, Dad, he didn't really get upset, did he? He took it in and he was like, okay, so what's next?
Yeah.
And that was him all the way through. And so I think that's when all the tests started. He had a biopsy, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had lots of CT scans, MRI scans. He was taken to the QE in Birmingham. So that was quite away from us, wasn't it? So we'd have to catch a couple of trains each day to go over there and go and see him. And even then, we'd go and see him and he'd be sat up in bed and he'd be smiling. And you think, oh, what's to come today? Are we going to get a diagnosis? We could never have imagined it was going to be glioblastoma. We thought, okay, we're dealing with a brain tumour. And I think you think, okay, it's going to be fine. People get brain tumours. They're benign.
Okay.
He's going to recover from this. And to then be told, so I think, was he in about 2 weeks?
Yes, and then they did think, funnily at first, that it might have been an abscess, and we were like really happy with that.
Yeah.
And then they put him on antibiotics, and then he rang me to say they've taken me off the antibiotics, and then you know, don't you?
Yeah.
And then they call you into the family room, whereas before they'd always talk to you around the bed, and that's it, don't you?
Yeah.
And they've just told this awful diagnosis that we've never heard of a glioblastoma before.
No.
I think a lot of people haven't.
No.
And that was it. That was the start of quite not an awful journey, but the start of,
it was quite a journey.
Numb at first, I think, about it. And he was comforting us, wasn't he?
He was,
He was comforting us. But once you've been told this awful diagnosis, and they actually did say, you've got 12 to 18 months, and then they left us in the room, just me, Charlotte, and God, there was a nurse with him, and she just quickly gave us a card and said, look, if you need to know anything, call me. And then she left as well, and I thought it would have been nice if she
had
stayed a few minutes just to make sure we were okay. And I remember trying to call her, and she never answered. It's funny, but it's not funny. But
no, it's such a weird process. Yeah, they can't.
Yeah,
they see it all the time. Yet for us, it's this massive event that has just rocked our world.
And
yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I think in the end we just went out into the gardens of the hospital, didn't we? And
funnily enough, John's one of his work colleagues, she was at the QE that day and she said to him, can I pop in and see you? And I thought, I don't really want to see this lady. I didn't know who she was. And I thought, we need to just sit there and think about what we've just been told. Mm. But she came less than an hour after we'd been told this terrible news. And John just sat with her and he said, oh, yeah, he's only got 12 to 18 months to live.
and he
made a joke about it. And we sat at one side listening to him and her. And she was it was lovely to see her talking to him. And
yeah.
She cheered him up in a funny sort of way. Mm. And we were glad she came in the end.
Yeah.
It was very surreal.
Yeah. It is a really surreal. It all just happens and then you're like, whoa. And then that's it. You're on that journey now. That's it. There's no stopping. You had the diagnosis and then did they keep him at the hospital to do some sort of treatments, or did they send you home and then sort of put a plan together about what was happening?
They said that they were going to take the tumour out. So he came home for the weekend and then on the Monday he went in and he had the op the next day. So he was allowed to come home for the weekend, which was lovely because he hadn't been home for at least a couple of weeks, had he?
No, got to have a drink.
Got to have a little drink of beer. We had a picture of him having a drink of beer and he was so happy to be home. And it was awful that he had to go back again, but he had that pink dye. Have you heard of the pink dye?
Yeah, makes you think you're going to wet yourself.
Turns you pink as well.
Yeah, it makes you think, oh, am I going to wet myself? It gives you all weird warm tinglers everywhere. You're like, ooh.
That's what Dad said.
And he had to go to the operating theatre with his whole body covered in this blanket.
Oh. And that was a funny story, wasn't it? So, yeah, he had to go down to his operation completely covered in a sheet. And Dad said, oh, it's going to look like I'm going to the morgue. He found that quite funny, didn't he? He's like, put a tag on my foot.
And a bell.
Terrible.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
Because he had that, I think that was in the early stages then. I think that's when Tessa Jowell had stood up in Parliament and said everybody should have the pink dye because it means they could see all of the tumour. Mm. And they managed to get 100% out. We were so amazed that he actually had all the tumour removed.
Wow.
Yeah, that was positive. Yeah. And when he came back round, because you worry when someone comes around from surgery, you think, oh, gosh, what are they going to look like? Are they going to be okay? Mm. He was back to his usual self within minutes, wasn't he, of being back in his room. He was so happy to see us there.
Yeah.
And that was lovely to have him back, wasn't it?
Yes. They even said in the office, they were amazed that he came around so quickly and he was laughing and joking with them. I said they'd never, don't normally see that. And I said it was almost like he'd not even had an operation. So they were quite amazed by him. They even said to us afterwards.
Yeah.
And he was just back to his normal self very quickly.
We were very lucky in that sense, weren't we?
Yeah.
Very lucky. He didn't change, because you read stories about people whose personalities change, and unfortunately due to the drugs they're on, it's the dexamethasone.
Keppra was on, and apparently that can cause people to be a little bit aggressive. Mm. And sometimes he never lost his temper, but when he was on that, sometimes he would get a bit snappy. And then he'd always say, I'm really sorry for being snappy. And we'd say, no, you've got every right to be snappy with what you're going through.
Yeah,
he sounds so lovely. He just sounds so lovely. Because I would, when I was on drugs, I was very moody. I wasn't very nice. I didn't mean to. Mainly that was on steroids. But I always think, like, you have to apologize to a lot of people afterwards. So it's amazing he kept to his own personality, and it didn't change him too much. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, considering all the treatment he had and all the drugs he was on, and he hated going to hospital, but the amount of blood transfusions he had over the years.
He hated needles.
Yeah.
Oh, he hated, the worst thing he hated the most was plasters. So he'd have to have his bloods done every week, wasn't it? And he'd, I'm not having a plaster, I hate plasters. And
then you knew him as the man that would have plasters.
He had no choice.
Yes. And I thought, because of everything that you've gone through, that's the thing you hate the most.
Yes. Yes.
He's shown his bruises. Oh, look at the bruises on my arm, he'd say, wouldn't he? Never mind the scar on his head. It was all about the, oh, look at the bruise. Look what she's done to me today, he'd say. But he'd laugh, wouldn't he?
He would. Yeah. He'd laugh with him.
How often was John having chemo and radiotherapy?
He had all that first, didn't he?
6 weeks.
And then they started him off on that, is it tazolamide one? And we've since found out that's the drug that they give everybody, the standard of care. And it, when he had his MRIs, they told us straight away that he hadn't done anything. And that's when they saw the tumours growing again. And then they all became inoperable then. And then they did start him off on a huge cocktail of chemo. And they must have worked for a while because he was then, he was okay, stable.
Yeah.
Quite a long time. But because it damaged his blood cells and his platelets and his hemoglobin, he had to have it sporadically. And of course, there came a point he was so ill with all this medication that they had to stop it completely. And that's when it grew back and it. Everything. He was on palliative care then, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
For all that time, we'd still go out for long walks with the dog, and we managed to get, obviously, COVID hit and we couldn't do a lot, but we still went away for a couple of weekends and it was like there was nothing wrong with him.
You'd never have known.
Yeah. And it's only when, towards the end, when one day he struggled to speak again, didn't he?
The last couple of months.
Yes, he was on palliative care then.
Yeah, but even then, so I remember the one day a wheelchair came from the local hospice, was it?
Yeah.
He said, I'm not getting in that. I don't need that. So he refused to even go in the wheelchair. So even though he knew that he was on palliative care, he was still fighting to the end, wasn't
he? Yeah. I was reading his blog and he had a really good sense of humour. Like, he's very funny.
Yeah. He didn't take two things seriously, did he?
Yes.
And he had that all the way through his diagnosis as well. He was the one comforting us at the time.
He was, yeah.
Sometimes
you'd have to tell him, oh, stop making jokes now. Be a bit serious for once in your life. And it was nice that he never lost that either, even right up to the end. He was always joking and laughing. He stayed his normal self right to the end, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Which was nice for us to see, and it kept us going, didn't it?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, absolutely. It was on King Charles' coronation, actually, he passed. So I'll always think of Dad now every time that celebration comes on TV. He knew we were there because we all crowded round his bed and we stayed there for the rest of the night, didn't we, until he passed late evening. And he woke up at one point and he said, what are you all doing here? And we said, we've come to see you. So it's a comfort that he knew we were there.
He was aware, yeah.
Yeah. He was aware, that's it. And he knew we were there with him at the end. So I think that's quite a comfort.
You always wonder, like, what's it like for them? My mum was looking up at the ceiling and she kept looking at this one spot. And we were like, my dad was like, what are you looking at? And I was thinking, like, maybe she's looking at an angel. Maybe she's looking at something that's coming for her. I don't know. And she was, but she looked peaceful.
Oh, like
she
like
was
just to looking. Think
you do, yeah.
That's a nice thought, isn't it? Yeah, that's a nice thought, isn't it? I like that.
Your dad is very. And just the one thing I'd like to say is that since then, that's when we found out that the brain tumour research hardly gets any funding and that it's the biggest killer of the under 40s, and that shocked us, didn't it?
I know.
It did.
It is a shock, because you're thinking, why? This doesn't feel fair at all.
Yeah.
But I think...
And I don't know if it's because we've gone through it, but I feel like in the news now you see more and more people with brain tumours, various different types of brain tumour, various ages. And I don't know whether it's because we're more attuned to it or whether it is because more and more people are getting brain tumours. So I think that sort of spurred us on to do something. Yeah. We can't just sit here now and be like, oh, okay, that's our journey over.
Tell us about your dad and brain tumour research. Tell us about that.
He did it with quite a few. So he did one with Tessa Jowell Foundation and the Brain Tumour Charity. And then we've since done quite a few with Brain Tumour Research because that's our chosen charity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, he was always he always wanted to speak out about brain tumours, about what he'd gone through and the terrible course of treatment that people have to go through that hasn't changed in over 20 years.
Tell us a bit about your charity, which is John's Crew.
Yeah, so we decided after Dad passed away that after seeing those stats, we wanted to do something to do with research, and we came across brain tumour research. We'd not done anything with them previously. We read up quite a lot about them, and we really liked their sort of values, their ethos, and where their money is going into research to help people and families like us. We set up our own fundraising group called John's Crew, and we've been working with Brain Tumour Research to get that all set up. And the idea is that we are a group of friends, family, local community. We fundraise, we do as many different fundraisers as possible throughout the year. And we've pledged to raise, I think it's just under £6,000 every single year, but we have actually exceeded that, haven't we?
Yeah, we'd say about 11,
wouldn't
we? Yeah.
Since September, about 11.
So you must have your clap, your clap, that's the wrong word, plaque, up on the... How many have you got?
We've got Mum's immediate family. There's about 30 odd of us, isn't there? Mum's one of five, so
children.
So there's a lot of us, and then there's a lot of friends, there's a lot of extended family, and everyone has just really got behind us, haven't they? Mm. They've all been doing various fundraisers with some
Bailey.
We did a firewalk recently, someone's doing the Great South Run later this year, someone's doing a bike ride. Everyone's got their own little thing that they want to do. My cousin is doing a skydive. We think she's crazy, but next month she's doing a skydive.
Wow.
So, yeah. And it's also about raising awareness as well. Yeah. We've got relatives that work at West Midlands Trains who have been selling pin badges, holding awareness days. My brother Daniel works at the RAC. He managed to get them to be Brain Tumour Research's Corporate Charity of the Year. So all the money that they make comes to John's. And then I think the idea is that we're going to try and fundraise as many days of research as possible. Mm-hmm. So I think we've already got a day scheduled in to place some tiles on the wall. And these tiles, they're at Brain Tumour Research's Centre of Excellence. They've got four centres of excellence. We get to go to one in a couple of months' time. We'll place these tiles on the wall. Mm-hmm. And it says this day of research has been fundraised in memory of John Lilly. Which is really lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it costs over £2,700 for one day of research.
Yeah.
So that's an awful lot of money. So we're trying to get as many of those days of research in Dad's name as possible and raise awareness as we do.
Yeah. Which one do you reckon you'll go to? Which one of the laboratories do you think you're probably in?
I think it's the Queen's College London one. And I think it looks specifically at glioblastoma. So they do all their research into glioblastoma, which of course is what Dad had. We're really passionate about finding a cure. And every time we read the news and things and glioblastoma is mentioned, it's always, is this going to be it? Is this going to be it? Because it seems to be more and more in the news, as I say now. So we're hoping that one day, with all our sort of fundraising and everyone else's fundraising, because we've met a lot of other people on this journey, haven't we? Yeah. That one day collectively we will be able to find a cure together.
Yeah, there's so much more. I don't know, it does feel like, wow, that they just get such a small amount of funding, but there seems to be a lot more noise. There's a lot more of us trying to say we've got a lot more opportunities now to be a bit louder. Social media,
I think, there seems to be a lot more noise now.
Where you said that the one that you've got your plaque will go up to is the one, the London one, which they focus on the GBMs. Yes. And so
yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so you'll get to go and see that. And I saw the one that was in Portsmouth, and it's interesting, but you do feel a bit of a sink in your tummy thinking like, wow, this is a big thing. And it brings you round into thinking like,
I feel like,
gosh,
that
it's quite a big thing.
I feel like that.
Yeah.
Yes, going to these labs and seeing these important people and what they're doing.
It's wow, that's saving lives.
Yes, yeah. So I am looking forward to it, but a bit trepidation as well.
Yeah.
But to see John's tile on the wall is going to be amazing. We've got more than one, I would think.
Yeah, there'll be a few now.
It's going to be amazing to see.
Yeah,
I'm quite looking forward to that.
Yeah,
lots of pictures. All your questions.
Yeah,
just
they get
of asking stupid questions.
Oh, I ask them anyway.
Yeah.
Just ask them anyway.
Yeah, no, that'll be good. I think that'll be really.
So one of the things I've found now with my mum, where she's not here, is I see, because it's like you, it's not that long ago, so everything's still very fresh still, like everything still feels a bit strange. The first year is always a bit odd. And
yeah.
Do you find that you're seeing things that then you think it's something really relative to your dad and you're like, oh, something happened. Like we went to my mum's favourite gardening centre because we were like, we need to go. And when we were there, it played Come On Eileen, and my mum's called Eileen.
Oh.
And she hated that song.
Oh, Eileen.
Oh, wow. Yay, high five.
Come on for my mum. That's a good
high
song.
High five. Oh. So they were playing Come on, Eileen, and we were like, oh, mum's here.
Oh. Oh, I love that. Lovely. Charlotte was named after the spider in Charlotte's Web.
Oh.
And she hates spiders. Not, sounds a bit daft, but I like, not save spiders, but I wouldn't never kill a spider. And I always put them outside, like, to look after them sort of thing. So
yeah.
John used to call me the patron saint of spiders. And funnily enough, I keep seeing spiders everywhere. I was in bed and one was hanging off my glasses and a week later one was hanging off my arm, and it just they probably would have done anyway, but I keep thinking, oh,
more aware of them. Yeah.
is that a spider now?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I did
hate them.
Yeah. Oh,
it's a little comfort, isn't it?
It is little things you just take them.
Yeah. We've always done that, I think, since John was diagnosed. Though your dad was diagnosed, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Live each day and sort of little things like that. Yeah.
Make the most of each
day.
You make
the most of that. Yeah. Before, you'd have ignored that, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Probably. You get all the day-to-day, you get, what's the word? The day-to-day just takes over, doesn't it? You go to work, you think, right, I've got this, I've got that, and then I've got home, I've got to make dinner. But now I think we notice and appreciate probably
more
the little things, yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
Have you
to do a lot more.
Have you had any support for you? Have you had people come to help you, like afterwards when you're with the hospice and stuff, or you're with the aftercare? Did they have any of that for you? Have you found some sort of aftercare?
Yeah. I think Brain Tumour Research have been very supportive. Mm-hmm. So we've got a dedicated community fundraiser that keeps in touch with us. But she's not just a fundraiser, Deb, is she? I would say she genuinely does care. Like, we got a Christmas card. She emails, she checks in at Christmas. She sent us a lovely Christmas message saying she was thinking about us. And I think it is genuine as well. It seems very heartfelt.
That's so nice.
We know that they offer services as well that they can offer to support people, so that if we did need them, they are there. Yeah. I always say, I think it's a strange one, grief, because you've got all these people that rally around you at the beginning.
And then they've gone.
And then
yeah.
I said there are certain people who get off the grief train at the first stop where you don't really hear from them after that. So there have been quite a few that sort of drop off. But I think the majority of John's crew are very good, aren't they, at checking in on us and making sure that we're all doing okay, or as okay as we can be. So I think for that reason, because we are quite a big family and we all are very close. I live around the corner from you, don't I, Mum? I see Mum every day. We probably don't feel the need for any sort of bereavement support as such, but that's not to say that down the line we might not.
I just feel that I'd probably cry all the way through it.
Yeah. If people could get involved with your charity, or if there is something that people can do to help, what would you want them to know?
So they can find us on Facebook. We're known as John's Crew, or they can find us through the Brain Tumour Research website. Just search for John Lilly's story. But we're always doing various things. We ask people to come up with their own events, fundraisers, awareness days. I think in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to be in a Tesco superstore in Telford doing a bucket collection. So if anyone is in the area, please do come and say hello to us. We'll be at the Wellington store. And likewise, if anyone's interested in doing any sort of fundraising events or just joining us, we met a lovely family a couple of weeks ago at the firewalk, and the gentleman that we spoke to, he's got exactly what my dad had. He's got a GBM4. He said that he'd been reading dad's story, that they'd got some sort of support from reading that, and they're in contact with you now, aren't they, Mum? Yes. They said they'd like to meet up and just ask various questions and things. So if anyone does ever have any questions about our journey, we're always more than happy to speak about what we've gone through, and if we can offer any help. We're no experts by any means. We can only share what we've gone through. A lot of people's journeys seem to be quite similar, don't they?
I was going to say, one thing that we did was make memories with John. He did little videos for us, little pop-up pictures, and he was talking to us on there. And he did lots of little things for us so that we can hear his voice and see him talking to us. And he did a little dictaphone and was telling us about his life and the things that he did. That was for you and Daniel, really.
Oh, that's lovely.
So I wanted to say to her, actually, because they've got a young son, and an 18-year-old daughter, and I wanted to say that's a lovely thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I've read a lot of people saying they wish they'd recorded their husband's voice or their dad's voice, and we just thought we'd do things like that. Yeah. He was happy to do them, wasn't he?
Yeah, we've got a good couple of hours of footage now of dad's memories. He talks all about from when he was born, when he was adopted, to growing up, joining the Navy, having my brother and me, and marrying mum. So we've got all those lovely stories in dad's voice. So I definitely say anyone that's going through what we are, that's been a real comfort to us. Mm. Yeah. So it's not just about fundraising. If there's anything that anyone wants to know, or if there's any support, or if there's any people local to the area that are maybe going through what we've gone through, I think it always does help to talk.
I think that would have helped me, actually, because you do feel quite lonely going through this journey. Mm. And I would have liked to have spoken to somebody that they would know what was going to happen to me and what was to come. Yeah, if there's anybody out there that would like to ask anything at all, we'd be happy to.
More than happy to pass on our details.
Yeah,
get in touch.
Oh, is there anyone you want to say thank you to?
I think probably just a huge thank you to everyone that has supported us over the last sort of 10 months. And I mentioned all our family. I'm sure they know how grateful we are for their support, not just with all their fundraising and everything, but just being there for us, checking in on us. I think that's really kind. And also to the Brain Tumor Research Charity. We've been in contact with so many different people over the last sort of few months since we started John's Crew, and it's been lovely to have their support as well. They're like an extended family of ours now, aren't they?
And all those that have donated.
We've had so many people that we've never even met before who have found our Just Giving page. They've donated. We did a bucket collection for the Charlatans, and people were so generous. The Charlatans themselves, they'd heard our story. They put it out on their social media channels, Tim Burgess, and that spurred more people to donate to us, didn't it?
Very grateful for that.
Very grateful for how generous people are. Yeah, I think people have surprised us, haven't they, even? Yes. Yeah.
Tell us,
lovely to see.
One last thing. Tell us something from both of you, your dad and your husband, something that people may not have known.
I think from me and Daniel, I could probably say mum used to work quite a lot of sort of nights, didn't you, or work long hours. So we spent a lot of our time growing up with dad finishing work and looking after us. And we never told mum, but he used to take us for miles on bike rides, miles and miles along main roads and things. He was just such a fabulous dad. He'd paint my nails. He'd play wrestle with Daniel, all the things that dad does. But he was so fun. He never raised his voice. I think we never got told off by dad at all. He'd always buy us
poor mum
always buying us sweeties. He was quite mischievous, I think, at times. Yeah. The things we used to do with dad and never told you. How about you?
And for me, he was just the most amazing husband. I think we were 18 and 19 when we met. And the day after we met, he had to go back to his ship because the Falklands had started. And I never saw him again. This was in the March or April time, 82. And I never saw him again until the November. But the minute I met him, it was just like, you've known him forever. He just had the most fabulous sense of humour. And we got married very young. I was 21, 22. And that's what makes it so sad that we've had all that life together. And now he's not here.
Yeah.
Hey ho, it's just, that's what's so awful, really.
But how amazing that you had, but to have met him at 18, that is amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm lucky as much as I can be. I'm so lucky that I had him as long as I did, that we were married so very young, and we had that long life together, and we were always happy. People always say, what's your secret to good marriage? We were just the best of friends, and just he was such a good fun, and he didn't worry about things. So I am, you're right, I am lucky. Not many people have that, do they?
How lovely.
Yeah. It's
it
nice,
is
isn't
lovely.
It?
I said that. We've been very lucky to have found each other, really.
Yeah.
Just through one little blind date, never expected to meet, and there he was. How strange is that? But very lucky. I'm grateful.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it that you both took the time to talk to us.
Yeah, it's lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.